The following is an unrehearsed interview with Barry Sims by John Clee for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. It's one of a series on burley tobacco, and the interview is being conducted on September 20th, 1983, at Mr. Sims' home in Mount Olivet. You work at the ASCS office.
Right, in Harrison County.
In Harrison.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me what that is, what that means, and a little bit about your job.
Well, first, ASCS stands for Agriculture Stabilization Conservation Service. Mm-hmm. It deal with all of the federal farm programs, which in this area the main program is burley tobacco. Mm-hmm. We keep up with all the quotas for the individual farms, mm-hmm. as far as the way they were set up back when the program first went in.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, currently they're on the poundage program, which was established in 1970.
Okay. And how long have you been working with them?
4 years.
Okay. And you started in Boone County?
In Boone County.
And then moved back down here to Harrison?
To Harrison County.
Okay. What percentage of your work is involved with tobacco?
Probably 50 to 60%.
Mm-hmm. And is it, well, let me approach it this way. If I bought a farm and it said I had 2,000, when the realtor was advertising it, it said I had, they advertised as having 2,000 pounds of tobacco. Now, what does that mean, and how do I take advantage of that?
What they would probably advertise them with would be the basic quota,
okay.
which is the quota that remains with the farm. Of course, they can vary from year to year according to over-under marketing from the previous year.
Okay. So the basic quota comes with the farm.
Right.
And you're in charge of that quota.
Right.
Now, how's your service funded?
Through the federal government.
Okay. And when you say you take care of a quota, how is that physically done? Do you just, is it just things on file, or?
It's on file as far as we issue a marketing card each year with the pounds that the producer can sell,
mm-hmm.
which is called effective quota. That's
okay.
the basic quota minus any, or plus any over or under marketings from the previous year.
Okay. Now, how long can this over and under marketing take place? Can you just hold over for 1 year then, or?
The quota can just be carried from 1 year to the next. It can just no more than double the quota without losing any pounds.
Okay.
The quota can be doubled.
A quota can be, you can go up to twice what your basic quota
right,
is.
Plus any leases.
Okay. All right, so if I had grown a crop short for 5 or 6 years on my card, it might be reflected on more pounds that I could grow.
Right.
Okay. Now, what does a marketing card look like? It's just
a regular credit card,
uh-huh.
just the same size as a credit card.
And it says on it what? Just a
has a farm name,
mm-hmm.
the owner's name. Mm-hmm. Each farm has a farm serial number.
Okay.
Each county has their own number, and each state has their own number.
Okay.
And they're all on the marketing card.
And then just what do you write in for the individual card? What's
just
on?
The pounds that they can market for the year.
Just the pounds. All right. Now, with that card, what does a farmer do with a marketing card?
He has to present it to the warehouse when he delivers the tobacco for sale.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pounds, the warehouse subtracts the pounds off as it's sold.
Okay. Now what if a farmer has brought more to the warehouse? Does he just have to?
Either has to take it back or to come to the county office to make a lease.
Okay.
To get additional pounds put to the card.
Okay. Now how's that done?
Well, some producers have burley quota that they don't want to raise their sale for various reasons,
mm-hmm.
and they're allowed to transfer that to another person on
okay.
a year-by-year basis.
Okay. Now, you don't handle that transaction.
Yes.
You do handle that
uh-huh.
transaction for farmers. Okay. So if I bought this farm that had the 2,000 pounds and I didn't want to grow it myself, I would have a card issued in my name.
You would have a card, but it would not be issued because
okay.
you wouldn't be allowed to market it. It would just be kept at the office.
Okay.
And then when you sold the pounds, it would just be subtracted off of it.
Okay, but what you're talking about there, if I leased it out.
Right.
Okay. Now, would I have to go down to your office to sign some forms or so forth?
Right, to sign a lease.
Mm-hmm.
And what you were talking about on the card, if you were going to lease,
mm-hmm.
each producer that raises tobacco has to certify that they did have tobacco grown on their farm before they're issued a card.
Okay.
So if you didn't certify that card, of course, you would be leasing, then you would not be issued a card.
Okay. I'll say, I don't get a card unless I grow it myself.
Right.
And so if I have leased it, then that goes on the person that's actually going to market the tobacco.
Right.
Goes on their card.
Those pounds are added to his card for
okay.
the year.
Now, can as an owner, can I do that indefinitely? Can I lease my tobacco out?
Yes.
Indefinitely. Okay.
It's you get history for it just the same as you would raising the crop.
Okay. Do I have to ever grow any tobacco specifically on my farm?
No.
Okay. All right. What about the total amount that's produced? How's that controlled?
It's controlled each year, of course, the Burley Co-op and all together with the Secretary of Agriculture to recommend to him how many pounds they think should be sold that year in the entire Burley Belt.
Okay.
And then has the right to adjust it each year, either mm-hmm. up or down, or leave it the same, which okay. there are controls on that of what percentage he can cut.
How much he can do that, right. So the Burley Co-op makes a recommendation, and that's composed of Burley farmers.
Right.
And then the Secretary of Agriculture?
He makes the final determination.
Okay, now how does that filter down to you?
Just, it comes straight from Washington to uh-huh. each state. ASCS has a state office, and uh-huh. everything is teletext to them, and then on down to the county offices.
Okay. So you know, like, it about when, what a person's...
It has to be announced by February the 1st of each year.
Okay. So they might tell you February 1st that everyone gets 5% less or 5% more?
Right.
Okay. In the 4 years you've worked with them, how has that fluctuated on the total amount grown?
There had been, in the 4 years, I believe there's been 2 increases and 1 decrease, which I think over the 4-year period, it's about a 3 or 4% increase over the last 4 years.
Uh-huh. Okay, for a total. Okay. Take me through a year working with you at your office and what happens when and, you know, what kind of, for example, you get in February the total amount that you're going to, that you can tell farmers what they're,
right.
what's going to be on their cards. Now, when do they actually pick that up?
Send each farmer a notice mm-hmm. of what their pounds will be for the coming year.
Yeah, you send that out when?
After they have to be mailed by the last part of February, first part of March.
Okay, so you don't have very much turnaround time there. Now, there's local offices all over the state.
Each county has an office.
Each county does, okay. And so that kind of makes an uneven workload, doesn't it, for offices?
Right.
Some places that don't have very many farms or very...
Right, okay. There's anywhere from some counties with 300 or 400 farms up uh-huh. to 3,500, 4,000 farms.
Okay. How many farms are you working with in Harrison
County? About
1,800. So you have to send out 1,800 letters then, just for tobacco?
Just for tobacco.
Okay. Now... All right, so you send those out before the end of February.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens next then?
Okay, really, you have to reconcile all of the records. Of course, mm-hmm. the way the federal law is written, the farmer has to get his notice, whether it's right or wrong, and it tells him that on his notice.
All right.
And the ones that have had late sales, they're not going to reflect on that notice.
I see.
So
they're
going to have less pounds than actually what they show.
So it's possible that some farmers would get their notice even before they've sold their crop.
Right.
People selling in Lexington late markets.
Right. And then the next step after that would be just to reconcile sales, which you'll spend quite a bit of time doing. Appeals to county committees and whatnot that they don't agree with their notice.
Okay, now what's a county committee? How?
Each county in the United States has a county committee that controls the county. Mm-hmm. For any decisions to be made, which are elected by the farmers for mm-hmm. each county.
Now, what's that committee called?
Just a county committee.
Okay. Uh-huh.
And it's composed of 3 farmers elected by the county.
Mm-hmm. All right. And they, if there's your office has what the records are, and then the farmer, and I guess warehouse records, and they might have to go to this committee to make a...
To make any decisions that are made in the county, the mm-hmm. county committee makes the final decision.
Okay.
Any appeals or just any decision has to be made for the county.
Okay. So by this time, around February or March, everybody's kind of getting this straightened out.
Right.
On the amount of pounds they have.
Right.
Okay. Now, people will start leasing. I guess you can lease any time, obviously.
You can lease 15 days after the notices go out.
Okay.
And then you can lease up until February the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
February the 15th is the final date of leasing for each marketing year.
Okay, that's for that year.
Right.
But now if someone wants to lease a crop, say, in March or June or even while it's going on.
Right, they can lease.
They can still do that.
For that current year.
Okay, now, there's not much of a physical process, is it just other than coming down to your office and informing you?
Right.
Okay. Now, how do they, as I said, I guess they sign a contract with the person?
It's just a contract, a legally binding contract that both parties have to sign and agree on the price. Okay. If they want to put a price, any kind of agreement they want to put on the contract.
Okay. They don't have to tell you what their private agreement was.
No. They can to make it legal if they would think there would ever be a problem with it.
But they might just come down, somebody said, I signed my lease over.
The majority of them do that.
Is that right? Okay. And just sign their name. Now, you have to keep that record.
Right.
Okay. Now, when does most of that activity take place? When are most people doing that?
The majority of it, of course, it, in the past, up until this year, it had been, they would not lease until market time.
Mm-hmm.
But with the heavy crop last year and everybody got caught with pounds they couldn't sell, the majority of this year was leased in the spring.
Okay.
Just as soon as the notices went out.
All right. So it really depends on the year.
On the year.
Mm-hmm. Now, is your office's workload really not affected too much by the difference of, say, in the amount of the volume of the crop?
No, because we're still dealing with the same number of farmers. And whether they sell 100 pounds or 1,000, it's the same workload.
And usually, there's probably work for you to do for each farmer, irregardless, because even though they have a quota, you're never going to hit that just right. Now, how many years can a farmer grow over? Go over his quota.
He can just keep going over indefinitely.
Oh, can they?
They're allowed 10%.
Okay.
Plus 10% on top of their effective quota.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, that 10% that they sell over will be subtracted from the next year.
Okay. So, all right, if they're over again, then it just subtracted. That just continues.
Right.
But you can't go over the 10%.
No, because the 10% is added to the next year, too, so it wouldn't allow you to sell down to zero.
Oh, okay. I see. All right. That's hard for me to figure out mathematics, but I think I see what you're talking about. Now, they lease all through the year. Is that really what happens then later? What kind of contact do you have later with a tobacco farmer?
Through the summer with the tobacco farmer, it's just mainly his leasing. Of course, any new regulations that come out, we're responsible to notify them.
Okay. Now, that leasing just trickles in all throughout the year, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then we send out just newsletters with the new regulations, which this year there's been quite a few with the new no-net cost on the tobacco. Actually, we don't really get that busy again until September, October.
Okay,
when you begin
what happens
to
then?
Get the marketing cards ready for market, plus each farmer has to certify that they will not nest tobacco.
Okay.
That they're agreeing to the no net cost, which this year is 5 cents, up from 1 cent last year.
Okay. All right, now, when they get this is around September.
Right.
And when they pick up the marketing card, they sign this agreement.
Right.
Okay, now, let's talk about some of the specifics of that agreement. You said that they'll guarantee not to nest tobacco. A non-farmer might not know what that means.
It's concealing any foreign matter or any foreign substance in the tobacco is actually the definition.
Yeah, so they actually sign, and this has become more of a problem specifically with the bales.
Right.
The new marketing method.
Well, it's become a problem. It's always been the problem. But actually, most farmers feel that they can nest more tobacco in hand tied than they can bales.
Is that right?
Because they can hide it easier.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't realize that. Okay. I thought, since the hands were, like a smaller unit, it'd be harder to hide things.
No, but the bale is so compact that anything that they put in it will just about squeeze to the outside and show.
I see. Okay. Now, does it say on this agreement what kind of penalties are involved if they?
The penalty for this year, which was just a 1-year thing as far as the penalty that's set up, was that any tobacco that went to the pool that was considered nested, they would have to pay back all the money that basket of tobacco brought.
I see. Okay.
Which is
a
considerable
fine.
Uh-huh.
Right.
If the basket weighed 700 pounds and there wasn't but 20 pounds of nested tobacco, they would still have to pay back the total price of the 700 pounds.
Yeah, that would be a big agreement. All right, now they also have, you said they agreed this no net cost. You want to explain that?
The no net cost is something that Congress acted on last year to assure all the taxpayers that the tobacco program was not costing to anyone other than the tobacco farmer.
Right.
And the tobacco that goes into the pool, which is supported by the government, was just coming from tax money.
Mm-hmm.
Now the farmer's having to pay that himself, which is really is what it amounts to. Most farmers feel as though they're paying all the money that's going into it. Uh-huh. Actually, all they're paying is the interest on the money that's borrowed from the government to support this program.
Okay. So you've made a distinction here. They're not actually paying for some of the costs. They're just paying for the interest that
they're actually carry it. Well, that would actually be the cost.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, once the company buys the tobacco from the pool, then the money is paid back to the government.
Yeah. So really the only government cost is the overhead and the storage cost and so on and so forth. Once it's sold, then of course the tobacco doesn't cost anything.
Right.
But it took a while the interest
to get the
to hold that. Right. Okay. And they're paying that.
Right.
Now that was a minimum amount last year.
It was 1 cent a pound last year, and it's up to 5 cents a pound this year.
Now does your office is the one that informs the farmer how much that's going to be?
Right.
But it's from the Secretary of Agriculture that actually makes that kind of decision.
Right.
Okay. The figures they were throwing around this year ranged anywhere, I guess the lowest they talked about was maybe 3 or 4 cents all the way up to 9 cents. How did the nickel come in? Do you know? Or?
Well, I think one reason is that the pool got rid of a lot of tobacco this year.
Mm-hmm.
And they seen that they were going to be able to get rid of some more real soon, and they felt that the nickel would cover the expenses for this coming year.
Now, in the future, if say that this year is short crop year, if the pool got hardly none, next year's cost to the farmer might be very minimal.
It should lower the cost if the pool can get rid of the tobacco they already have on hand.
Right. Okay. All right. What else is in this agreement? You've talked about the nesting and no net cost.
They have to also certify of how many acres or approximate acres of what they're burley tobacco they're raising on the farm.
It still refers to acres.
Acres as far as on this form. This is probably the only form we fill with that's on acres.
Uh-huh. So there, even though, of course, that would vary from farmer to farmer. Some farmers get a better yield than others. But your office, I guess, is just really trying to find out what percentage of a farm, for example, is under cultivation with tobacco, and how much total tobacco, acreage-wise, is being grown.
And also, they have to certify of whether they're raising any non-quota tobacco, which could consist of anything other than burley tobacco in this area.
Now, I'm curious about that. Do you ever have any contact with people trying to do that or doing that?
It's not in the last few years.
Uh-huh.
At one time, there was, but now there is a penalty on any non-quota tobacco.
Yeah.
Not a penalty as such, but it does come off the marketing card the same as burley, which it's a lower price, so most people don't want to put with it anymore.
Yeah. If a farm didn't have a tobacco quota, for example, someone could raise tobacco, non-quota type tobacco, and not have to report through your office?
Of course, they would still have to, they would have to pay a penalty on that, even though it was non-quota tobacco.
Mm-hmm. Off any quota that they might ever have?
Well, even if they didn't have a quota, they would have to pay a penalty.
Oh, is that right?
Which is based on the price support of the previous year.
I see.
Which this year it's $1.36 a pound.
Okay.
So actually nobody can afford to raise it and sell it at a penalty rate.
Yeah. Tell me how this program, of course, farmers are very supportive of the back program, almost, fervently. And your office, the ASCS, is really the arm of the government that kind of controls and operates the program. Is there anybody that, is terribly unhappy? I guess farmers maybe that, I know that a lot of farms now are going into big time operations wanting to raise a lot and they have to lease it to get it. Are they still pretty supportive or?
Probably 99% are supportive of the program. Of course, you've got the 1% that's not. Each 3 years, the burley farmers are allowed to vote on whether they want to keep the program or not.
Yeah.
And in the state of Kentucky, the whole burley belt has passed by anywhere from 98 to 100%.
Sure. Let me make sure I haven't missed anything in this agreement that the farmer signs. We talked about the no-net cost and whether there's any non-quota tobacco, about the nesting. Is there any other significant points that a farmer...
They, well, each farmer has to certify to his tenant. This is a new thing that's, of course, under the NONET too. One, the tenant and landlord don't have to reach the same agreement on whether they want to contribute to the NONET cost.
I see. Or
then they could fill out that form that one party did not agree to have. Of course, then they would be, all the tobacco that would be sold under penalty.
Okay.
For the one that didn't agree to take it out.
Now, and you mentioned what that penalty was.
$1.36.
Okay, so it makes, effectively, no one does that.
Right.
No one. Was there any other major portion of that?
That's all the form system.
Okay, so you've got that going on in September, and I guess that's really the bulk of, is that the bulk of the work? What about during the marketing season?
Well, during the marketing season, of course, after this form is completed, then we issue the marketing card.
Mm-hmm.
Once we have all signatures obtained.
Okay.
Then through the marketing season, we can have control to some extent over the warehouses of tobacco that's sold. We fill out all the reports that go in with the pounds sold for each day from each market.
Now, what you mentioned, what does this mean now? Our warehouses are restricted, I guess, by their floor space on how much they can sell, or?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Of course, each market is just allowed to sell so many baskets, and then that's broken down into individual warehouses according to their floor space, how much they can sell.
Okay, and you all keep an eye on this, too.
Right, and then we also keep marketing recorders, our part-time help that work through the office during the winter months. They work in the warehouse itself.
Okay,
so subtracting the pounds off of each individual car.
Okay, now you have, what were they called, marketing recorders. Uh-huh, and... You don't have to employ one of these for each warehouse, do you?
No.
Okay.
They just want two marketing reports for each set of buyers.
Okay. All right.
So a market that has something, it just has the one set of buyers.
I see. So you just have the...
Right. In Lexington, I think maybe 9 set of buyers, so they would have 18 marketing reports.
Okay. And these are only employed during the season, so that runs from November to...
From November up to February, maybe the 1st of March.
Okay. And you're trying to keep track of all this...
Right. They obtain the reports from the warehouse each day, and then bring them to our office the first thing in the morning. That's when we fill out reports.
Okay.
And that's when all your statistical data is sent in from the average from the previous day.
Okay. Now, does that kind of take you to the end of the season then? That's really the...
That takes us up until when the marketing cards turn back in.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, then... What the marketing reporters send in each day is programmed in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
A printout is sent back to us in probably March, April. Then when we get the marketing cards back, then we have to reconcile with that printout.
Okay, now the marketing cards come directly back. The warehouseman, you said they subtract it as they sell it from the card?
The marketing reporters do.
Oh, okay. Does the card come back to you from the warehouseman?
No, it goes back to the farmer.
The farmer brings it back into you or sends it in or something. And then you reconcile what the recorders have been keeping a record of.
Right.
And what the card says.
And then we have to match that against the card.
Okay.
Of course, if it doesn't agree, then we have to get the farmer in with his weigh bills and see where the mistake was made.
Okay. This seems like an incredible amount of mathematical calculations and so on and so forth. How does this work effectively? I mean...
It works real good because there's something to verify... Everything that's done with.
Just cross-checking.
Everything comes through the office. What comes through the office is stored in a computer. So there's a second check against anything that's done.
Now, in a county size of Harrison County, you mentioned 1,800 tobacco farms.
Right.
What does your office consist of, you know, kinds of employees and so forth?
We have, of course, myself and two regular full-time employees.
Uh-huh. And then the... During season, you have these marketing recorders. Uh-huh. What kind of people do you find to do this? Are there people, usually farmers?
They're usually, majority of the time, farmers' wives.
Oh, okay.
They're just, most of them, if you even find the majority, it'll be ones that have school-aged children that just want a job during the winter.
Yeah.
Of course, the warehouses are mainly running from 9 to 3 in their home.
Sure.
With their children the rest of the day.
So that makes a pretty nice setup for them. When farmers are debating around the general store about, you know, whether the tobacco program ought to be supported and, you know, how much the government supports tobacco. And of course, talking to, you know, some people, the government does make an incredible amount of money in taxes from, but is your office kind of forgotten in that it is it is supported by the government and it's not part of this no net cost kind of thing?
I think, you know, most farmers feel like that, you know, they're supporting themselves.
Oh yeah.
That the government is not supporting them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like, of course, it's seemed like more controls have been put on lately.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, a lot of them are getting fed up with that part.
Uh-huh. Well, do they kind of, even though you're really there to make sure the program works successfully and right. effectively, you feel like sometimes they vent their anger on you or about the no net cost and some of the other things?
A few times, very seldom.
But your office is totally funded through the federal government, Department of Agriculture.
Right.
Before I leave that, I'm going to ask you some more tobacco-related questions. But now, you're actually, tobacco is considered a commodity, is that right?
Right.
And what does that mean as far as, like, your office is concerned?
It's considered a commodity in a sense that it's a commodity, but it's not considered a commodity in the sense of the other programs that we deal with.
Okay.
You know, most of the programs we deal with as far as commodities are your feed grains,
mm-hmm.
which are...
Now you're talking about corn and...
Right, soybeans, wheat, okay. that are supported by the government with mm-hmm. programs that are not, that are just a direct burden to the taxpayer.
Right. So even though it's, you're telling me that tobacco is classified in this broad group of commodities,
right.
but it's singled out...
That the burley farmer's paying for it himself,
okay.
and the taxpayer is paying for the...
Yeah.
such as the PIC program or
right.
acreage reduction program for the wheat and feed grain.
Yeah. So in corn, if the government, of course the government has support price,
right.
And if it buys excess corn, then the storage and whatever cost, whatever losses they have are incurred just by the taxpayer.
Right.
Whereas burley...
the farmer's paying it himself.
Okay. If it ever, the pool, the co-op has always, I guess, been able to sell its tobacco.
Right.
But if we ever got in a situation where they'd have to sell it at a loss, would also be part of this no-net cost?
The farmer would have to stand there, too.
Okay, I see. Now, the reverse is also true if when the co-op makes money, that goes back to the farmer.
Not with the new no-net cost.
Okay.
Up until the 83 marketing year, that was the case. Now
so
the money is used by the co-op.
I see.
Of course, in a sense, it would go back to the farmer by maybe lowering
his
cost charge.
In the future, right.
But he doesn't get the check back like he used to.
Now, okay, at one point in time, a farmer might get a check
right.
Whenever that was sold.
When it was sold and whatever was made on his crop of tobacco, then
okay.
he received the additional.
The only way that would ever happen again is if they just made so much money that they'd have more than enough to operate, I guess.
Right.
That's going to be
it's
probably.
It's doubtful that'll happen.
That's very doubtful. Okay. This is side two of a tape with Barry Sims. As we ended the other tape, we were talking about how tobacco is singled out as a special kind of commodity. I wanted you to go ahead and explain. You talked about that you all work with feed grains too, and what other commodities, what other kinds of things do you have to keep check on in this area?
With the feed grain itself?
Well, are there any other commodities grown in this area that...
No, not in the state of Kentucky.
Okay.
There's a small amount of cotton just in the tip
yeah.
of western Kentucky.
Right. So really, say in Harrison County, you've just got soybeans and corn, the tobacco.
One or two barley farms.
A couple.
Yeah, that's no grain sorghum.
Yeah. So the big thing is, I guess, you know, corn is probably, particularly the last couple of years, has been a big thing.
Corn is the bigger crop.
Next to the tobacco. Let me go back to the tobacco then and ask you about... particularly the leasing aspect and so forth. You told me about now. What happens if who decides when a large farm is sold? How what part will get what poundage and so on and so forth?
Of course, if the farm is sold as an individual tract, it'll get the pounds that the basic quota that stays with the farm.
Okay.
If it's divided up, our office determines how much would go with each tract.
All right.
That's determined by crop land.
Now your office decides.
Right.
If it is split into tracts.
If it's split into tracts.
So you might decide that one section gets all the poundage.
Right, if all the cropland would lay on that section.
Okay, I see. What about the lease limitation? I know that's something that's changed.
The lease limitation, since the poundage program had gone in, was set at 15,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
In 1982 crop year, it went to 30,000. Now it's back down to 15,000.
Oh, they have changed that.
They have changed it back to 15,000, effective for the 84 crop.
Okay, now, what about leasing? If I, we got a lot of little counties in the back, or in Kentucky.
Right.
If I live on the line, can I lease another person's?
You cannot lease across county lines. It has to be within the county.
That's kind of an absolute kind of
rule. Right.
What about a landowner that owns a lot of land and has land, say, in Bracken and Fleming or Harrison and Robertson? Can he grow it all in Robertson?
Up until 3 years ago, you could combine farms across county lines if it was the same ownership.
Uh-huh.
But now you can't do that. If it was already combined, it could be left that way.
I see.
But there can't be any additional land combined across county lines.
Okay, so a big farmer might buy another farm, but he'd have to grow, if he wanted his quota, he'd have to grow it. Right,
keep it
there
in the county where you own the land.
Does the fact that, you know, of course different counties' farmlands vary, does the fact that in some counties the lease price for a tenant is way high and in another county it's low, that doesn't affect you all really?
It doesn't affect us in the sense, other than what you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
That's when farmers want to combine their farms across county lines.
I see, okay. You've got more people trying to get through that angle than you do really trying to lease across.
Right.
Because your bookwork catches that
right
pretty quickly. Is there any way to, you know, some places now you can buy little tracts that might have 300-400 pounds. Is there any way for someone to lose that poundage?
The only way they can lose it is to go 5 years without raising tobacco.
Okay.
Raising or leasing.
Okay.
5 years without history.
All right. Well, what if they just grow it once every 2 or 3 years?
That's still all right. They would be fine. They could keep their quota.
So the only way you lose quota is to
go 5 consecutive years.
Okay. The only way to grow or to gain some quota is how?
Of course, a farm without a quota can apply for quota, but it's real hard to do.
Uh-huh.
The main thing that catches most people on it, there are 4 or 5 requirements to it. The main one that stops most people is that they have to obtain half of their income from farming.
Mm-hmm.
Which if they just own a small tract without a quota, most of them have jobs off the farm, and it's practically impossible.
Yeah.
Of course, they have to have available equipment,
mm-hmm.
barn space,
yeah.
and 2 years out of the last 5 previous of raising tobacco mm-hmm. experience.
So it's hard to raise tobacco when you don't have any.
Right.
So it's kind of a catch-22 for people.
Right. Plus, you can, even though you don't have a quota, lease quota.
Uh-huh. Oh, well, that's true. What about, does anybody ever effectively get any?
Yeah, there's, you know, in different counties, there's, it'll average maybe 1 producer in 4 or 5 years that'll be able to obtain one.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are through someone that's either been a tenant on farms and gone out and bought a farm without quota.
I see.
Or a farmer that was already in, say, in a hog business or a dairy yeah. operation that
and just
has got the income from farming.
Right, and been raising. How much, I guess you can apply for as much as you want, or?
Of course, the county committee determines that. Of course, uh-huh. that's recommended.
Mm-hmm.
And it just depends on the size of the farm.
Uh-huh.
And the amount of pounds that are available that year to be given out.
Okay, now how's that determined? Is that by people that haven't, that lost?
That have lost quota, and mm-hmm. that's determined, all of it that's lost goes to Washington. They distribute it out to the Burley states, and the states distribute it out to the counties.
So it doesn't, if a whole lot of, you say some big corporation came in, bought a lot of land and didn't raise the tobacco, and of course that land lost its tobacco, that wouldn't automatically come back to the county?
No.
Where it was?
It goes to national level mm-hmm. and it starts back down.
Well, you, as you've already said, in most counties, people don't get new pounds. What happens to some that's filtered back down to the county, some of the new poundage?
The new poundage, uh-huh. it's given to for new adjustments.
Okay.
To farmers, of course, the county committee again just reviews farms in the county that they feel like are low with quota according mm-hmm. to their production records
okay.
and just distribute it out accordingly.
Okay. You mentioned that, you said before I leave that, you'd already mentioned that it's gone up like 3% over the last Was that right?
Last 4 years.
4 years, okay. So it's been a minimal amount that...
Right.
Now, if there were several short years in a row, and of course that wouldn't really affect whether you're going to raise the quota, because everybody would be short and be able to grow more whenever they had a good year.
Right, but sometimes they do raise the national average just for that reason.
Okay.
The companies have a lot to do with it too, uh-huh. recommendations to okay. the Secretary of Agriculture of what they think they're going to need for the next year.
Okay. You mentioned that you sent out newsletters through the year to keep people abreast of mm-hmm. of what kind of changes have taken place. In the years you've been working, particularly with tobacco, what kinds of things have you had to send out to farmers that you thought were pretty significant?
Well, I think in the last year, there's been more changes in the tobacco program than there has been since the tobacco program was established, mm-hmm. with the no net cost coming in.
Okay, that's one of the main...
Right, all the provisions to it.
Okay.
Of course, right now, we've been working the last week on corporations, government property that's going to have to sell their bases.
Okay, let's approach that topic, because that's, you know, that...
It's really a hot topic.
Okay.
With some corporations...
Yeah.
To sell and some wanting to sell.
Yeah. Well, is this something that's going to happen?
It's going to happen by December the 1st.
Okay. Well, that seems to be, you know, it's the end of September now. And I guess that finally, that was talked about, I think, as early as what? Well, it's been talked about, I'm sure.
A year ago.
Okay.
And then, of course, the interim to the Federal Register was printed in April.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the final register was just received by the county offices today.
The final register.
The final Federal Register with the final ruling on it was okay. issued today.
Now that was issued by the Secretary of Agriculture,
right.
I guess. And he got congressional orders to do that, or how?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, it became law when the no net went in. Of course, it was just up to the lawyers to get the final way it was going to be handled.
Okay.
Down and then printed into the Federal Register.
Of course, I'd have to talk to a politician really to address, you know, that issue, but this was kind of a compromise thing for tobacco,
mm-hmm.
to try to keep the program going. They thought this was a good thing to give up.
Right.
What, say in a place like Harrison County, how much tobacco are we talking about there?
It's really hard to determine right now.
Mm-hmm.
The way the final law is written, any farm has to be considered for loss that is not owned by either an individual or by husband and wife.
Okay.
So that's going to affect probably 30 to 40% of the farms in Harrison County.
Okay. Now, what kinds of other people own farms? You mentioned corporations.
Corporations, government, churches, educational institutions.
Okay. Would a family that say jointly owns a farm?
A family that jointly owns a farm, if it's other than husband and wife, would have to be reviewed.
If
they owned another business.
Uh-huh.
And 20% of their income did not come from farming, then they would have to sell.
I see. Okay. So even though it originally affects 30-40%, it might, that
it
figure
probably would not affect over, by the time it's handed down, 25 producers maybe in the county.
Out of the 1,800.
Right.
Okay. Now, the ones that you kind of used as examples, those are the ones that are really going to be hit, maybe the schools and the churches.
Right.
Government institutions, so on and so forth. You mentioned that some people are happy about the, well, I guess there's not very many happy, but...
Well, some corporations are, because they want to get rid of it. They don't want to fool with it anyway.
Just the bookwork of
right.
leasing it out.
Right.
So
it's more trouble to them than it's worth.
Right.
Of course, your schools, such as Harrison County High School has a quota.
Mm-hmm.
FFA class has been raising it for years.
Kind of an education.
Right, and then they need that money to their chapter.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to lose approximately $5,000 a year income.
I see. Now, you said that they are going to have to sell by December 1st.
Right.
Is this going to be handled through your office too?
The sale itself will, the transfer will be. Of course, they'll, selling it, you know, be up to them on an individual basis,
mm-hmm.
of how they want to sell it, give it away, whatever.
Yeah. So let's use an example like Harrison County High. If they decide to sell to a private individual, they'll come down to your office and they won't have to say how much they sold it for or anything, but they'll just sign it over more or less.
Right. Just be the same type of agreement as a lease, except it'll be permanent.
Be a permanent kind of lease.
Right.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess anybody that classified is an individual or husband and wife that owns an operation is eligible to buy.
Anybody's eligible to buy, there will be certain restrictions on that.
Mm-hmm.
Which one restriction will be that they have to contribute 20% of the costs, total, not cost, but 20% of the total price that crop will bring to the production of the crop. So in other words, nobody could just buy it and turn around and lease it out. They would have to raise it themselves.
Okay, I see.
4 or 5 year period.
Uh-huh. 4 or 5 years. So let me understand that. If they lease it the first year, 20% of the cost?
They have to contribute to 20% of the total cost of the production of the tobacco.
See. Okay, all right. That individual or husband and wife who buys that tobacco.
Right.
Has anybody sold anything yet? It just came through.
There's been a few that have been sold back when the rule was first written that thought it was going to become effective right now.
Uh-huh.
Of course, there hadn't been anything transferred in our office. It's just been an agreement between the parties.
Okay. You haven't heard through the grapevine what some of that tobacco
is. Have no idea of the price.
Gotcha. Have any idea of what it might be?
The only thing I would have is what the Lexington Herald quoted, $4 to $5 a pound. I think they were maybe quoting on the Kentucky Horse Park.
Yeah, they were talking about. Yeah, I understand that. Now, how is this isn't really going to affect production or anything very much. It's just kind of a
no. It shouldn't affect production at all because the pounds will just be transferred from one farm to another. So somebody will be raising the pounds.
Do you see a lot of tobacco being concentrated? And of course, you're in a good position to see this. Over the 3 or 4 years you've been working, is tobacco beginning to be concentrated in the hands of a few producers?
No.
In there?
Because mm-hmm. There's just as many tenants, you know, mm-hmm. small tenants, large tenants, as there ever was.
Is that right?
There's a few people that have got bigger, but they've got bigger because some of the smaller ones have got out on their own accord that have just wanted to get out.
Uh-huh.
Have gone and took other jobs.
Yeah. But you don't see a few producers with big marketing cards and others?
No.
There's still a lot of small.
Right. There's more small than there is large.
Mm-hmm. You talk about all the drastic changes. Has the marketing process itself, the selling of the finished product, that hasn't affected you in any way, has it?
No, and really that part hadn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of back of going to being bale instead of the hand tied.
Yeah, but.
And of course, the proposal for this year is that it can be in a burlap sheeted fold.
But that really won't, you don't
that
have to keep track
us.
Of that at
no.
all or anything. What about your relationship with the different people you work with, farmers, for example? You have a lot of contact with them.
I have a lot of contact with farmers.
Uh-huh.
I think farmers are the greatest people to work with.
Okay.
Because we've got something that they want.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like some of the other federal agencies that are having to contact people for various reasons
mm-hmm.
other than to try to help them.
Yeah. So I guess a lot of farmers are really anxious to find out what their quota is. And,
right.
So they come in there and pick up the cards when they're ready. And
sure. We don't have any problem getting them in for that.
Okay. I see. You have to do some work with warehousemen too. How are they to work with?
The majority of you have very little trouble with warehouse people because they want the tobacco program to work too.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if the tobacco program goes out, then they go out too.
Yeah,
of course,
right.
We go along with them, but they want to abide by the rules and make sure that everything is done in the best way for the farmer and for the program both.
Let me follow that up then. You mentioned that, you know, the a great percentage of your business depends on, it deals with tobacco. You think that ASCS offices would be that drastically affected if the support program went out?
If the tobacco program went out, it would probably, especially for all the counties in the Burley Belt, with ASCS, there just wouldn't be any work.
I see.
It would probably go from an office in every county to maybe a central office in 5 or 6 counties.
I see. Just to handle whatever commodities are left.
Right, with some feed grain, and that would be the majority of the work.
Right, I see. What do you see working in the government offices? For example, what kinds of things are you having to tell farmers now? Recent newsletter, for example. You just kind of keeping them to date on what's going on?
Right, with the tobacco and with the other programs.
Yeah.
Of course, we've like I said, sent out the newsletter today notifying them of the corporations that this would begin. There's a payment in kind program for wheat for next year.
I see.
To go into small amount of detail on that.
Yeah.
The wool program, which we have every year.
I see. What about the, what do you see for the future with the tobacco? The tobacco program, for example. And,
I think there's going to be changes, but I don't think it'd be near as drastic as what we've had in the last year. I believe they've got a program now that'll be accepted by the taxpayer and by the farmer.
Mm-hmm. And you think these adjustments then have kind of strengthened?
Right.
Don't foresee a lot of things happening.
Can't think that, you know, the general public taxpayer, mm-hmm. you know, as long as he knows that it's not costing out of his pocket, that he's going to be satisfied with the program.
Yeah, let me ask you a couple little specific things. For example, this lease limit, do you see it changing again, like you've gone from the 15,000 to 30,000 back to 15?
I don't really think so, because it was at 15,000 ever since the beginning of the poundage program.
I see.
And the reason it went to 30 was maybe a mistake, mm-hmm. just a temporary adjustment to try to get the tobacco program caught back up.
I see. What about the leasing across county lines? You think that's going to...
I don't foresee that in the future, because mm-hmm. it would be impossible to control through the county offices.
Okay. So the way the it's kind of set up now kind of necessitates that,
right.
So that people can keep control of it.
Right. It would be impossible for one county office to know if a producer had quota in another county.
Right. That's true. What kind of coordination is there between the county offices? It really isn't, I guess you have to coordinate more with the state.
With the state, yeah.
Because it's kind of a self-contained unit there. Right. What about the, there's not any experimentation going on with non-quota type tobacco or different varieties of tobacco or anything?
Very little. Of course, the tobacco companies do some of that themselves
uh-huh.
to individual producers.
Yeah.
But very little of it in this area.
Tell me about the violations when someone, we've talked about the nesting, of course, which is a violation of the program, but the actual growing.
Okay, of course, the quota has to be raised on the farm
mm-hmm.
that it's assigned to,
okay.
unless a lease is transacted.
Oh, I see.
Of course, if tobacco is not raised on that farm, then it is in violation of pounds.
Okay.
Due with the penalty of the 3/4 the support price from the previous year.
Now, how do you keep track of that?
We usually keep track of it from neighbors.
Okay.
Or by somebody telling on themselves.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
Usually it'll come from someone that, through not even aiming to tell on them, will say, you know,
something.
John Doe's not raising any tobacco on his farm this year, and then John mm-hmm. Doe turns his marketing card in that he sold 10,000 pounds.
I see.
Then we know that there has been a violation committed.
Now, how's that? Why would somebody do that? Are they speculating?
There's different reasons. Of course, some of it is honest mistakes. Some of it is just completely dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are tenant farmers that raise tobacco on 8 or 10 different landlords.
Uh-huh.
They'll take a few pounds from each farm, take it to their own,
and
sell it without the landlord ever knowing it.
I see.
Of course, this is just to save their production cost. I mean, they've just mm-hmm. seems got a free crop.
Okay, I see. What about would someone violate because maybe they have a poor land and somebody else over here has got some real good land and
they just shouldn't let them do that because they could sign a lease.
Yeah, okay.
And transfer. Okay. Of course, sometimes it happens just to an honest mistake
uh-huh.
of a farmer that just hadn't kept up with the program that well.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he is notified 4 or 5 times a year that he can't do this, but just doesn't take time to read the regulations that he can't
do.
Sure,
it's true, yeah. Because of all this mathematical work, I wondered if you all had computerized or how that was working.
At the present, we're not on computers, but from what we can understand, we're going to be on computers within the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm. So when you're doing, you know, like you get a crop report in, how much that fella sold and how much excess it was, and you have to figure out a marketing card, you just have ledger books and calculators and
right,
and just figure it out.
And then, of course, each producer has kept a 5-year history card
uh-huh.
that is kept current.
And now, just, do you issue those cards too?
No, we keep those in the office.
Oh,
that's just for our own
okay.
use. And we
uh-huh.
Just put everything on those cards that's done.
Okay. Now, do you keep those 5 years and then discard, or?
We keep them probably 30, 35 years. Okay. There are 5 years on each card, and we just keep them indefinitely.
Keep filing, huh? Okay. How do you all, of course, you're like, what's your title with the office?
County Executive Director.
You're County Executive Director. So you're in charge of personnel and coordinating these programs. You have to file an annual budget, for example. Obviously, there's different rents in different counties.
Yeah, all that is done at the county level.
Uh-huh. Now, how do they give you an X amount of money for overhead, for example, and you have to find a rent within that limit? Or?
Right.
Okay. So you generally do just lease your place? Or?
We lease our office space.
I see. And you're in charge of personnel, as I said. What kind of training do you need to get a position like this?
Of course, you have to have a background in agriculture, mm-hmm. a degree in agriculture.
Okay.
And then there's a 6-month training course. Mm-hmm. And once you're hired, you have to take that before you're certified to become the county executive director.
Now, what do you intern then, more or less, with another group, another
you just,
at an office? Or?
You take training at various offices over the state of Kentucky.
I see. Is there a mechanism for you all to transfer around? And
yes.
You said you were in Boone.
I was in
Boone
County and transferred to Harrison County.
Uh-huh. Obviously, when you change kind of jobs, too, because different places raise...
Different places have different
operations. You prefer what kind of area?
With the Burley Tobacco.
Okay. That's what I figured. Thanks for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Okay.